But they're engaged.
Doesn't matter. It can't happen.
Why not? It's bound to come up.
It's impossible. Lois could never have Superman's baby. Do you think her fallopian tubes could handle his sperm? I guarantee he blows a load like a shotgun right through her back. What about her womb? Do you think it's strong enough to carry his child?
Sure, why not?
He's an alien, for Christ's sake. His Kryptonian biological makeup is enhanced by Earth's yellow sun. If Lois gets a tan, the kid could kick right through her stomach. Only someone like Wonder Woman has a strong enough uterus to carry his kid. The only way he could bang regular chicks is with a kryptonite condom. That would kill him.
Welcome to the Geek Generation, episode 21, take 2, son of a bitch. I'm rarely swearing right off the bat, but Brian and I'm not even going to pretend like this is our first go at this, because we just recorded, I don't know, we were just getting into Brian's geek outs. Unfortunately, I noticed that his side wasn't recording over the Skype, so we're doing a second take at this. So
it's going to be hopefully a better one. Time.
It's always a better one the second time around. Oh, yeah, totally.
Yep.
So, Brian, what are you geeking out over this week?
We meet again.
We do.
Yay!
First of all is the Thor trailer, which if you haven't seen, everyone needs to go to our website at The Geek Generation and check it out.
That's right, on The Geek Generation.
Exactly. This time I got it right. It's pretty fantastic, and if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. Secondly is two new things that you can find on the PlayStation Network or the Xbox Live Network, whichever you may prefer. The PS3 is better. Oh, I didn't say that.
I heard it, by the way.
One is the old school X-Men arcade game from 1992.
Awesome.
Which is the classic dual screen six-player co-op one, which is pretty awesome. And it's a cool price for $9.99, so you should definitely check that out.
The only thing in that game that always bugged me is that Wolverine's claws shot laser beams.
And it was like laser claw. He has like lasers. Yeah, and when Colossus would make that funny noise when he powered up, he'd be like, "Argh!"
Dude, I always used Colossus.
I always used, no one ever wanted to play Dazzler. Like, I'd always be in the arcade and then be like, "Oh, Dazzler or Storm's the only ones left." No one wanted to play the female characters.
No.
But so the second also download is something called Marvel Pinball, which basically is like an old school pinball arcade machine, but with the added like interactive stuff. There's four different pinball machines. One is Spider-Man, one is Wolverine, one is Blade, and one is Iron Man. And basically you're playing pinball on the pinball machine with all Marvel stuff, and while you're doing it, certain characters like Green Goblin or Mysterio or Doc Ock attack the pinball and cause different things to happen. It's kind of cool, interactive, and it's again $9.99, so it would be something cool to check out. And lastly, I've been rewatching some old Justice League and Justice League Unlimited episodes on DVD.
Nice.
And it is a great show. And there's certain friends of mine, not specifically Scott Toomey, that refuse some reason refuse to watch the show, and I've been telling him for years to watch it. But anyone who hasn't seen it really needs to check it out, because the writing is superb and it's pretty much the best superhero cartoon ever made. So
has Toomey still not gotten around to watching any Justice League?
No, not at all. I think he may have watched some Superman, and that's all. He hasn't watched any Batman, no Justice League, and yeah, I just want to, like, but no, I can't force him. But yeah, he has not seen any as far as I know. Every time I ask him, he's like, not yet.
Damn it, Scott. And Scott hasn't been on the show in a while because he's been working nights and everything, but as far as I know, that changes sometime after Christmas break.
Yeah.
So,
let's get on that.
I'm hoping to have him back on sometime, but if he doesn't watch the damn Justice League episodes, I don't know if that's going to be an option.
There you go, Scott. It's a challenge for you.
Get to it, CK.
Yeah, so
maybe we need to talk about it. Maybe it'll be a whole episode of just talking about Justice League, and if he doesn't watch him, he can't participate.
There you go. We should do that.
Yes. Well, then, I am geeking out over a couple different things this week. First of all is I've talked about Howard Stern so many times on the show, and I am so friggin' excited that he has re-signed with SiriusXM for another 5 years. And yes, we're going to talk about it in the news a little bit more, but I feel like I can continue living, basically, because I was scared. I really didn't know what he was going to do. I didn't think he was necessarily going anywhere, but there was talk of him going towards like iTunes or some sort of internet-based thing, which I think would have been awesome because it would have brought a little more prominence to the industry that we're participating in. Mm-hmm. But having him at Sirius still is just keeping a level of consistency. I know we're going to keep getting the same quality out of him, and for 5 more years, I think that's fantastic. And I do have some sound bites from him later on that we'll play during the news, but for now, that's all I'll say, and I'll move on a little bit. Do you listen to Stern at all?
I used to in the past. I do have Sirius, but sometimes I've catched him here and there, and I do enjoy his show, and I agree. I think I'm sure Sirius is breathing a huge sigh of relief, because let's be honest, most people who subscribe are pretty much subscribing for Howard Stern. So.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of talk that Sirius couldn't afford to lose him. Couldn't afford to keep him. But the reality is I don't think they can afford to lose him, because if he goes, that's a huge portion of their listener base. And I don't think they even realize how big.
Yeah, exactly. So,
the other thing I'm geeking out over, and I haven't talked about the show in a while because it really has, it's in the off season right now, but it's Warehouse 13. Do you watch it all?
I have seen last season. I have not seen any of this season yet.
Okay. I really like the show, and I also like that it comes out kind of during that mid-season lull where everything else is on a break. So
it's a smart idea.
It's a very smart idea, and it's the highest-rated show on Sci-Fi, or at least the highest-rated show that they've put out. And fortunately, last week they came out with a holiday episode, which was really not tied to either particular season. It was kind of a standalone episode, but it was just nice since they won't be back for another few months, and they've been gone for a few months. But just to get even just one episode is kind of nice. It's like reconnecting with the family, even if just for an hour.
Very cool.
Yeah, but actually, I messaged Eddie McClintock, who is the male lead and plays Pete Latimer on the show. And I'm really trying to get an interview with him for this show because I'm a huge fan. And I actually think he would be an awesome cast for The Flash because of his...
I could see that.
His witty... Like, he plays such the childlike, having fun role and then can switch to super serious that quick. So I would love to talk to him about stuff like that. And I know he's got some geek in him as well. So I think that'd be a fun conversation. But I'm working on it, people.
Nice.
That's all my geek outs. So what do you have for freak outs this week?
Oh, freak out! Not too many. My second is, I don't know if you watch it, probably, I don't know if you do, but, The Walking Dead season finale was a pretty big letdown for me. I've been enjoying the show pretty much, so far this season. It was only a 6-episode season, but I just felt knowing the comics and knowing the writing and acting on the show, it was just a very mediocre finale. It didn't really feel like it didn't leave me feel wanting more. There was no cliffhanger. It was just sort of there. And Scott, I think, pretty much felt the same way. He's a big fan of it. So, it was just sort of like that's it. So I had kind of a blah feeling. But my biggest freak out, and of course I flipped out the day this was announced, and I will go on a semi-short rant on this. Uh-oh. And of course...
Oh, wait, I already know. Is this is this Joss Whedon and the Buffy reboot?
Yes, this is the Buffy reboot. So Warner Brothers is a piece of shit now. I like Warner Brothers. They own DC. But this whole Buffy reboot is like the worst idea ever. They already have an established fan base that loves the property, and they're trying to recreate something that failed as a movie the first time and was terrible. And it just makes me angry. And the only reason they're doing it is because, you know, it's the whole vampire craze. And, you know, obviously, you know, they asked Joss Whedon to be a part of it, and he declined. This whole rebooting of it to, and I guess the girl from Glee is up for the role, and I just am angry. I mean, the thing you can do, it's going to happen, but yeah, a big dislike for that, and I'm sure all the new vampire teen girls will go crazy for it, even not knowing that it even existed before. Mm-hmm. So.
See, I didn't even watch, I didn't watch Buffy the series. Yeah. I have seen the original movie. And I still think this is a bad idea. Like, I have no loyalty to the TV show, and yet it's still stupid because how long ago did it end?
2003.
Right. So why the hell are you making
rebooting it? Yeah.
See, it'd be one thing if they were doing a Buffy movie that was like a continuation of
the
TV show.
I don't get it. Like, let's reboot, and they're not using any of the characters in the TV show, because in the movie there's only Buffy and no one else from the TV show. So it's just like, and you know, no input from Joss Whedon. It's just like a terrible idea. But you know, I'm sure they think they're going to make some quick money off of it with the whole vampire craze. So you know, whatever. And they hired some 25 or 26 year old screenwriter who have never, female screenwriter who have never even heard of. So, and she claims that she's like going to, you know, try to keep it as. But I don't have any faith. I hate to say that, but I have no faith in it. So.
Yeah. Well, their timing with this whole thing is just poor anyway, because the vampire craze is actually on a downswing.
It is. And once the Twilight stuff ends, I think you're going to see a big, you know, no one's going to care anymore about vampires for a while.
Yeah, Walking Dead is kind of kicking off a whole zombie resurgence, and now everything is zombie-related, to the point where I even saw some stupid... they released the, what is it, the 2010 Blacklist. Did you look at that at all or hear about it?
I have no, I know what you're talking about, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, for those that aren't familiar, the 2010 Blacklist is a list of movies that were pitched and voted on by a number of, I don't even know who the people are that vote on it, but they basically create a list of all these premises and pitches for and scripts that were actually looked at, but for whatever reason, they just didn't get picked up in 2010, and some of these move on, and actually some of them have been picked up since the Blacklist was created. But one of the top ones on the list that seemed to be very popular was the stupid idea about like two people... a couple that can't have children, they're living in a time when the zombie apocalypse is striking. They find a baby zombie and can't bear to kill it, so they are going to raise it. And I'm just thinking, where is this going? Because the thing's never going to not be a baby, because it can't grow up. And I don't know, it just seems like it's like two men and a baby zombie, or like, I don't know. It's
yeah, it sounds terrible.
It's the worst premise I've ever heard, and yet it's like at the top of this list. I can't imagine. And I don't like zombie stuff to begin with, but good Lord, what the hell?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean, that's what Hollywood does best. When comic book movies are popular, they pump anything they can find that's comic book property, and now they're gonna pump out anything they can find that's, you know, zombie related, because that's the end thing. So there's no original ideas anymore. So
yeah, it's just stupid. I mean, there were actually some really cool ideas on the list. I'm trying to think of one of the other ones. One of the best ones I heard is that some a movie about some guy going through his entire life. He ends up dying on the battlefield, and like at war or something. And he resets back to his 18-year-old self with all of his memories and his experience intact. But he can kind of – I think it's called like Replay. And he basically can live his life through a second time with the knowledge of his first live through.
Not bad. That's good potential.
Which I think a lot of people have envisioned that at one point or another anyway. So I think that's a really cool idea. I'd like to see it happen. That said, do you have any other freakouts?
No, that was my big one, so no.
Okay. Well, regarding The Walking Dead, you had mentioned that. I don't watch it at all, but... I've seen every time an episode's on, my Twitter explodes with people talking about it, either so favorably or just really pissed off. So I think it's really a 50-50 shot on this, at least from the input I'm getting. What have you experienced?
From what I've seen and heard is most people really like – I've gotten seen nothing but positive about it until the season finale. But then Scott did tell me that our fellow friend – from Dangerous Memories was not a fan of it. So I didn't realize there was negativity out there, but I guess there has been. I haven't really seen, you know, like the people. I don't know if it's the people who've read the comics and don't, because they're not really, they're not using the, they're not following the comics completely because they don't want to, you know, be able to, people to telegraph where it's going.
Yep.
So I don't know if it's people that, or, I mean, then there was rumors that they fired the entire writing staff at the end of the season.
Right.
I don't know. I've heard a bunch of different things. But yeah, I haven't heard too much negativity from where I frequent the boards I frequent and stuff. Most people have been pretty favorable to it. But of course, that's the fan base of the comic book. So I don't know if that's just – to the general public, it may not be a favorable show. So I don't know.
Well, speaking of season finales, Dexter just had their season finale on Sunday as well. And I'm not going to say anything about it because I hate it. I know there's a lot of people that don't get Showtime and want to catch up on Dexter. So I'm not going to say a word, but a lot of people are freaking out over the way that it ended. They just weren't happy with it. I myself was satisfied, but I am planning on doing a complete Dexter episode in the near future, just really rehashing and discussing everything that happened in the past season. So be on the lookout for that because I'm hoping to do that very soon.
Nice.
Yeah. My only freak out this week, I didn't have one to begin with. And I think I kind of started off the episode with my freak out because out of all friggin' programs on my computer to cause major issues, Microsoft Office? Really? I was trying to open up my show notes continuously and it would lock up my computer whenever I opened up Word. So I basically had to do a reinstall of the program before we could start recording today.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, and I can already hear all you Mac heads going, oh, you have a PC, blah, blah. Shut the hell up. I'm sick of this whole PC-Mac rivalry. I don't
give
a crap. I mean, I use PC because I'm more familiar with it, and I can speak freely from both ways because unlike most people, I actually do own a Mac, too. I have a PowerBook that I bought in college because I did go for a design, and I wish I never bought it because it's a paperweight now. I can't even.
They're so overly expensive, and I don't really. Oh, you don't get viruses or spyware. Okay, I'm sorry. I just don't get it. Like, I don't know. I never am not. I know certain people that are going to be listening are going to freak out, but I just never saw the purpose of a Mac. I mean, I used to be into PC gaming, so I mean, you can't really game on a Mac. So that was another thing that never really got me into a Mac.
Right. Right.
I don't know. I just always used PCs, and I grew up on PCs, and I don't. I mean, I may be hypocritical because I have an iPod, but you know what? That's a different Apple product. I just don't use Macs. I'm sorry.
Right, so. Right. Yeah, I mean, I have an iPod too, and everything, and I would get an iPhone if I didn't have to get a data plan. Speaking of which, that's another kind of freak out I have. This is a little impromptu one. I wasn't even thinking of. I am an AT&T customer, so and I don't have an iPhone. Oh, I know. but
how dare you?
I know, right? I've had the same phone, which is just like an old Motorola for like 4 or 5 years at this point, and I don't have a data plan. I think I only have about 250 texts a month, and I pay like $5 for that, even though I'm thinking about canceling that too, because I think I would still pay less in texts with the amount that I normally do if I just paid for each one. And I rarely use my actual cell phone anymore, but it's probably the part that I use the most out of it. But there are several reasons that I don't want to get an iPhone, even though I'm due for an upgrade now. One of which is that they require you to get a data plan. And I don't feel like paying. I get a 15% discount because I'm a state employee. And I don't feel like even paying the $60 a month it would be for me to get the voice and the data plan together. Plus, like I had mentioned during the New York Comic Con episode, when myself and my friend Matt were trolling around the Expo Center or whatever the hell it's called, I had full service to make calls, to send texts. He had an iPhone, same service. We're both AT&T. He couldn't do anything on it. No internet, no texting, no phone. Why the hell would I upgrade and pay more for something that I can run into getting less reliable service with?
I don't mean to interrupt, but
no,
I mean,
go ahead.
I've gotten into huge, like I'm talking like huge verbal and on Facebook arguments with certain friends because they claim, and I mean, it's a noted fact that AT&T's service, especially with the iPhones, is completely spotty. It's been proven by numerous sources, and they still, well, no, it's not true. No, it is true. I mean, I have Verizon, and I don't have a problem. Like, I don't know. I know so many people who've had incredibly terrible service with AT&T, depending on where they are. Mm-hmm. So.
As an AT&T user, I can actually refute that their service is poor. I have never, ever had an issue with my AT&T, but I am in the minority of the fact that I do not have a data plan. And I think that puts a huge crutch into the service. So if you're relying on that 3G network or 4G network, then I think you are going to have spotty service because maybe that's not as high quality as their regular because it is a different band. And I mean, I don't understand all the nuts and bolts of how cell phone services work, but I know mine works just fine. Meanwhile, all my friends that have iPhones do run into issues. So I'm not going to totally point the finger at AT&T. I'm going to point the finger at whatever service that is attached to the iPhone, which, yes, is AT&T, but it's also a fault of the hardware because my hardware works just fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I have thought about upgrading because I'm due. I've never actually paid money for a phone. I've always gotten something free. There is a BlackBerry that I could get for free, and it doesn't require me to get a data plan. I could just use it on the Wi-Fi. So I'm really considering that.
Very cool.
Yeah. So I would like to have that kind of portable Wi-Fi function. There's Wi-Fi in so many places now. Mm-hmm. I don't need the 3G everywhere, and I don't want to attach myself. Yes, it's convenient to have the internet at your fingertips all the time. And yeah, it would be cool. But so many people are going into a weird area of really just becoming rude, obnoxious people. And we discussed it a little bit when we were talking about cell phone etiquette a couple episodes ago. But I don't want to get into that realm myself. So I think I've been avoiding it in a way so I don't become some social deviant. But anyway, I actually wasn't expecting to have all that kind of freak out stuff. It's one thing to another with me. As soon as I get the ball rolling, it just all kind of pours out. But anyway, let's do something a little more relaxing and fun because it's time to play Top 3.
Three, two, one.
This week on Top 3, being as you are our resident comic book expert, I tend to gear those questions towards that realm for you. And this one I've actually been looking forward to for a while because I figured you might have some really good answers on it, not to put the pressure on you too much. But I would like you to tell me what the top 3 weapons in the comic book universe are. Because we talked about sci-fi tech on the last show, and there were a lot of great answers, even though I thought people kind of went with like a developed technology instead of something specific. Like they would say time travel instead of like the DeLorean. And I was kind of looking for more specifics, but I think in the future, we're also going to get into like the top 3 movie weapons or things like that, because that's a whole new realm. But comic books have so many amazing different weapons. Yeah. So, I mean, I think I could probably guess one that's going to be in there, but you go ahead.
Oh, there's so many choices. It's like, it's so hard to narrow it down because my head has like got a zillion different answers.
I'm sure.
I'm going to go from top to the, there's no really order, but I guess I'm going to start with the most, one of the first pops in my head is the Green Lantern power ring.
Like yeah. That. I mean, that was the first thing I thought of when I thought of this category too. How do you not include that?
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, the idea of having a ring and you just think with your will, well, whatever core you're in, whatever ring color, but even the Green Lantern one, what if you just use your willpower, you create anything with it? I mean, that's just like crazy. And then like flight, everything included is just like, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I would definitely say for technology-wise, I always think, as a kid, I always thought it was the coolest, and I still think, although they kind of downplayed it in the current movies, is Batman's utility belt, of how he always had some sort of, especially like, depending on where, what variation of Batman, I mean, the 60s Batman had sort of like a ridiculous utility belt with like all sorts of contraptions, but I mean, I think Batman overall has like very cool technology weapon-wise, I think, you know. Mm-hmm.
And it's not even just the belt. I mean, he's got little compartments all over that suit.
Yeah, exactly. The belt. I mean, the grappling hooks, the everything, batarangs. I mean,
dude's a human Swiss Army knife, and then some.
And then I guess finally I would pick. Just like I said, so many choices, but I guess I'd have to go with Spider-Man's web shooters because I was fascinated with them as a kid, and the whole double pressing of the middle of your middle and ring fingers to operate to make it shoot webbing and to web sling with that, and you know, putting the cartridges in on the wrist level. I always thought that was very cool, although it never made any sense to me how a 15-year-old was able to create that. But you know, it's comic books, so
I gotta admit, I'm a little surprised you're going with like Spidey's web shooters. I was expecting something like, and I can never, is it Molinier? Is that the right name?
It's either, I always used to pronounce it Mjolnir, and I know that's completely wrong.
That's what I say too. That's what it looks like.
No, what you said is supposedly the correct way to say it, but I still say Mjolnir because I just like the way it sounds. looks
It sounds way cooler than Mjolnir. Yeah. And the only reason I say that is because of the Avengers cartoon I've been watching.
Yeah, exactly. That's the a couple of years ago they made that like the official way to say it. But you know, screw it. Say Mjolnir because it sounds cooler.
Yeah, Mjolnir. I'm curious what they're gonna say in the movie because I don't think they even mentioned it in the trailer.
No, it's not. But I didn't really think of that actually. But yeah, that is a definite another cool Captain America's shield. There's so many. I mean,
yeah,
so
I know. There's a ton. You could say basically anything the Punisher holds in his hands. I mean,
Daredevil's Billy Club. I mean, yeah, so many things.
I'm still thinking too. Like Wolverine's claws and his whole skeleton could be considered weapon-like.
Yeah,
like
Flash's cosmic treadmill. No, that's not really a weapon. I'm going way out there.
Maybe we'll get into comic book tech at some point too. What about like the Infinity Gauntlet?
Yeah, oh, geez, there you go. That right there is.
I guess it's a different category. If I asked what would be the top three most powerful.
Yeah, that's pretty much. You know, you do anything you want. You're God pretty much at that point. So, yeah.
Now, I understand there's in one of the Marvel Superhero Squad games coming up, I believe they're going to use an Infinity Sword.
Really? I saw the one that they just released, I think, a couple of weeks ago. It has the Infinity Gauntlet, the quest for the Infinity Gauntlet, but I did not know about the Infinity Sword.
I think there's something about the sword in it. Now, is that an actual weapon
from
the
books? I've
never
heard of the Infinity Sword. Oh, okay. As far as I know, that's not. They may have created it either on the cartoon or for the game.
I could just be making shit up, too. I mean,
no,
that's a good chance. There's a very good chance. I don't follow comics the way I used to anymore. Although
that's all right. Hey, you knew what the Infinity Gauntlet was. A lot of people, casual people that say they're comic fans, had no idea what that is. So.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot more back into them, and I actually, in part, have to thank Slim and the... Or I should say at Slim in the comics podcast, because even though I'm behind on listening to some of their episodes, I have almost a reinvigorated interest because I just listen to some of the stuff that they talk about, even if I don't know what they're talking about. But I'm like, oh, that sounds really cool. I should check that out. So like in particular, they were talking about, I think it's Streets of Gotham or what was it? Gotham PD, something like that.
Gotham Central.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Gotham Central, where they're talking about the cop's perspective of Batman and everything, the whole book.
Fantastic book.
Sounds friggin' amazing. So I'm going to have to start getting back into that stuff. And with the amount of free time I have, I don't know when the hell I'm going to fit all this stuff in, but I'll get around to it eventually, I suppose. But yeah, good game. I did get a whole bunch of top three categories in from fans, but I just want to remind all the people listening that if you do have an idea for a top three category, of course I would love to hear it. If you want to aim it at a particular co-host, feel free. You can send that to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com, or you can even send them to @geekgeneration over the Twitter if you're on there as well. And also don't forget to follow us. But we're going to take a quick break right now, and when we come back, we're going to get into this week's listener emails answering, God, I am all over the place today, answering last week's poll question, and then we'll go into the news block. So we will be right back. So Anna.
Yes?
Christmas is on the way.
It is.
It is.
Stressful time of year.
Yeah. Where do you do most of your Christmas shopping?
I do my shopping on Amazon.com because I can do all my shopping from the couch.
Really? Well, that's very convenient.
It is. It is. It takes the stress out of the holidays.
Did you know that the Geek Generation is an affiliate of Amazon.com?
I did not know that, Rob.
You didn't? Well, what you can do to help the Geek Generation is go to www.thegeekgeneration.com, click the Amazon button, which will take you right to Amazon. And when you buy all the Christmas presents that you're going to buy, you'll actually be earning us a commission as well.
That sounds too easy.
So go to thegeekgeneration.com, use that Amazon.com button, and make us some money while you're doing your Christmas shopping.
It's super easy, and if you don't do it, you're a bad friend.
Hi, this is Hector from Dangerous Memories, and you're listening to The Geek Generation.
We are back, and as promised, it's time to take a look at some of the listener emails. Now, before I go into the listener emails from this week and answering the poll question, I actually got a very interesting email from one fan who is a first-time writer, and I cannot tell you how excited I am when I get an email from somebody who doesn't normally write in or really just doesn't even want to talk about the poll question and just wants to talk about the show, because sometimes I'm putting this stuff out there, and I don't know if, A, people are listening. I mean, I see there are downloads, but I don't know how much people actually listen to it. And, B, having any kind of opinion about the show that we're putting on here, I appreciate, whether it be beneficial or negative, because, really, I'm not, I have nothing to gauge whether I'm actually doing an okay job or not.
Feedback is always helpful.
Yeah, I love feedback, and it just lets me know that people actually care about it one way or the other. So I'm going to take a look at this first email here, and I don't know if I'm saying this name right. It's Chinese, and it sounds like it might be a joke, but it's not. It's not.
I was
just,
actually thinking that when you said it, but okay.
It's not just spelled Chinese. It's like C-H-A-N-E-S-E. So I apologize if I'm saying that wrong, but it goes on to say, hello. This is my first time writing in, but I have been listening and following on Twitter for a while. I just wanted to write in to say that I think Rachel Moore was a poor guest. That's in reference to our last show. We had gamer girl Rachel Moore on, who works in the video game industry and was a special guest host with me for the last episode. But it continues on. This is in no way a reflection of your awesome podcasting and hosting skills. It just seems like partway through the episode, she decided to be incredibly difficult. Everything you asked about she hated or didn't agree with or thought was absolutely terrible. It is totally fine to disagree and express your tastes and opinions, but it seemed like with every answer she was shutting down the dialogue. It made me think back to an episode where you discussed text and cell phone etiquette and noted that the only time it was appropriate to receive a text phone call during a date was if it was a rescue call slash text out of the terrible situation. If the podcast had been going on live, I would have sent in one of those. Some sort of, oh my god, my PS3 just melted. Keep up the awesome job. So, it's a little positive and a little negative, and that's always nice too. I mean, you don't want to just punch someone across the face and tell them that something sucks, so I appreciate the positives too. And I think they have some valid points. I mean, I thought Rachel Moore was a very strong co-host coming out of the gate. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going to expect me to just kiss her ass because she was willing to come on the show. But at the same time, I think I have a certain loyalty to my fans, or at least my listeners, even if they're not necessarily fans. But I think they deserve my honesty. So I'll be totally honest with them right now. I was trying to book Rachel for a few months, and it took quite a while. But I had heard her on another podcast, and I thought she was very strong on it. So I wanted to have her on the show. I actually thought a lot of her opinions on her game reviews and things like that were very valid. And I thought that all of that discourse would be very interesting for the listeners to hear. I had a lot of things I wanted to ask her about and wanted to hear her opinion about. And I think this writer has some valid arguments against Rachel's appearance. While I did think she came on very strong at the beginning of the episode, as things went on, I did feel like I was running into a lot of brick walls as far as trying to talk about particular things. Yes, we had differing opinions, but the fun in that is discussing the difference in opinion instead of just saying that you don't like something. And I mean, I don't know if she's going to listen to this. If she does, I apologize, but this is all constructive feedback, I hope. I mean, I don't always do the best job. And, again, Rachel did a great job at the beginning of the episode, but the last segment was, going to be all about some of Rachel's favorite games from 2010. And I was expecting that segment to have a lot of discussion ready for it. And, it turns out that the outline I sent her a few days before we recorded the show, she decided to look at for the first time minutes before we started recording.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, not a lot of preparation done. And anyone that knows, I've talked about how much preparation it takes, or I take in this show. It takes me days of preparation to put this show together amongst all the articles that I write and the research that I do. So taking a whole segment head on right before you record it is not going to be organized. I think it came across as not organized. And if you can tell, I think it only went on for about 9 or 10 minutes before I decided it was time to bail out of that segment and pretty much the episode. So, Rachel, if you are listening, I apologize, but I have to be honest with my fans and they expect that from me. And if I think something is of a lower quality, like the last segment was, then I have to be honest. But I still stand behind the first part of that episode being very strong, and Rachel was really good in that opening part of the show. But I'm not going to go. I feel like I've already gone on way too long with this.
I was going to throw my two cents in. No, it's okay.
No, feel free. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm not taking sides on it because I honestly haven't listened to the episode yet. But, I mean, the fact that you sent her an outline, right there shows you, you know, you have initiative in that she, you know, the least she could have done was, you know, looked at it beforehand. I mean, to be honest, I mean, you always send me outlines. And, I mean, like, for example, what we're going to be talking about later, I mean, I could have done that on the fly and it would have been terrible because I would have been just, like, pulling things out of nowhere. I mean, you have to somewhat, you know, at least the way I work, because I need to sit down and, you know, write it down or look at it and, you know, think about it and give it some thought instead of just, you know, doing it spur of the moment. I mean, some people can pull that off, but I mean, I don't really think that's like a great way to, like, you know, do things. So,
yeah. And I think the quality of the show has changed as a result of the amount of preparation that's being put into it right now, because I mean, even at the beginning when we started doing things, I didn't even provide my co-host with an outline, and I just kind of went off of mine. So they were kind of, and that caught some people off guard, and it was hard for them to follow where I was going. And then for a while, I wasn't giving my co-host the news prior to discussing it. But now, granted, I don't give you everything reading.
No, but I mean, it's the
stories I'm going to talk about, so exactly. We can be a little more prepared and actually have conversations about it. And I think that's
important.
Instead
of just going, oh, yeah, oh, cool, that's awesome.
Right. So, I mean, I told Rachel after the episode that she has an open door. Anytime she wants to come back here, promote anything, just be on the show again. And I hope she does do that, because I did enjoy talking to her. And overall, I think it was still a solid episode. Mm-hmm. But that, of course, there's always going to be little things here and there to learn as we move forward.
Exactly.
But anyway, okay. Answering the poll question after another little diatribe, I'm just sometimes I get carried up in my rants.
No worries.
And I go on too long, and then I feel guilty that I talk for too long on one thing, and I'm like, wait a minute, this whole friggin' show is just me ranting. So if people aren't enjoying that, then I don't know why they're even listening. last week's poll question was, what was the best game released in 2010? I was expecting maybe more answers for this one. I don't know if people are gaming as much as I thought they were. Is there anything particular you had in mind, Brian?
I'm trying to think. I did 2010. It's weird because, like, I have half the games I'm thinking of. I guess I would have to say it's a tie between God of War 3 and what was the other one? That actually I'm playing now, Castlevania, Lord of Shadows, which was came out of left field, but it's a really intricate game and it's really hooked me right now. And it's a long game. Yep. Like, I've put probably close to 6 hours into it, and I'm only like, not even a quarter of the way through. So I'm very always frustrated when the games are like 6 hours long and then you're done. This one right. Seems to be from when my friends played it, and he said it took him like 30 to 35 hours. So it looks like it's those are my two. I haven't really, I'm sure if I thought about it, I could actually come up with better ones, but off the top of my head, those are my two.
Yeah, for me, it would definitely be God of War 3. I enjoyed the hell out of it. My only wish is that it was a little longer.
Exactly.
Yeah. The fans, let's see what they had to say. First one comes in from superfan Chris Tong. He says, howdy, Rob. My favorite video game of 2010 is without a doubt, Call of Duty Black Ops. It has a great storyline, massive online gameplay, and wonderful graphics. Not to mention, it looks amazing in 3D mode. It puts you right in the line of fire. I don't know if he wrote it with the intent of me saying it like that, but I saw capital letters, so I felt the need. It puts you right in the line of fire. There are more attachments, perks, challenges, prestiges, awards, trophies, etc., 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 than any of the other military-type games I've ever played. Looking forward to the new map packs to be released. Have a good one, and happy holidays. Have you played Black Ops at all?
I have not. Actually, that's a lie. I did play it. My friend got it, and I played about 10 to 15 minutes of it, and I also played another 10 minutes of the zombie level in Best Buy. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it seems... I mean, if you love Call of Duty, I think you're going to be very, very pleased with it. I mean, I enjoyed the one from last year, Modern Warfare 2, but I'm just sort of getting away from those kind of, I mean, massive multiplayer, I mean, online, you know, multiplaying, just right. Shooting each other. I mean, I enjoy it to a certain extent, but I mean, after a while, it gets repetitive to me. So, I mean, I have not picked it up, and I probably, maybe if it drops in price, I'll pick it up at some point, but... I'm not like a super, but I've heard a lot of people, you know, give it good reviews, and it's supposedly pretty awesome. So
well, yeah, there's a lot of fanfare for it. I myself have not played it, and yeah. I think It's due large in part. For one, I don't play a lot of military games, and two, I never really got into first-person shooters on consoles because I always played them on my PC, and the precision of a mouse versus a joystick is a huge difference, and I just cannot get used to it on the console. There are some rare exceptions. I mean, I played Halo and Halo 2 on Xbox, and I think I might have played a game or two that was a first-person shooter on PS3, but for the most part, I really try to avoid the first-person shooters on consoles and stick to them on the PC.
It's a good point, though.
Yeah. The next one comes in from Mike Volpe. He says, Halo Reach. This game is so much fun that I have had no desire to go out and purchase. He's got a little typo there. Let me fix that. This game is so much fun that I've had no desire to go out and purchase any other games such as Fable 3 and Fallout New Vegas. Halo has captured my attention nonstop for the past few months. I have not played Halo Reach at all.
I have not played any of the Halos since like Halo 3, maybe, because I never had an Xbox, and I mean, okay, everyone can hate me now, but I never really saw the point of the Halo games. Ooh, you can drive vehicles. They always seemed very generic first-person shooter to me. I never got into them, so no, that's just my opinion, but I never really saw the hype behind it.
Yeah, I'm not an Xbox guy either, but for me, the appeal of Halo was always playing cooperatively with someone else because that was an insane amount of fun.
True, I can see that point, too. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. The next one comes in from G1. This is probably his shortest email ever. It simply says Fallout New Vegas, which I have sitting on my shelf and have yet to touch because, once again, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, I'm not done yet.
I always hear about the Fallout games. I've yet to actually play one, but I mean, I heard they're so long and so huge and so time-consuming that it's almost daunting to me to, like, I'm always scared to try it because I'm like, I'm going to, like, lose like half my life to this game, but I always hear great things about them, so I probably will eventually check it out, but yeah
I'm really pumped to play New Vegas, and yet I'm so afraid for the amount of time that I'm gonna lose because I think I put close to 80 hours into Fallout 3.
Yeah, that's what I hear usually you put around.
And I haven't even played through all the expansion packs in Fallout 3. Good lord. The next one comes in from Matt H. It says MOH Tier 1, which I'm assuming is Medal of Honor Tier 1. I didn't even know there was a Medal of Honor game called Tier 1.
I guess. And, I was not aware either.
And he says, okay, I'm biased. So, okay. I've never heard of it or played it. I mean, I'm familiar with the Medal of Honor series, but I had no knowledge that they had a game called Tier 1.
I do know that they came out with a new one, so that might have been the new one. But, I have not played it, or I've never actually played a Medal of Honor game, so I don't have any opinion one way or the other.
It falls into the same category for me as Black Ops. I really just don't play military first person shooters at all. That was the poll questions. That's pretty much it. Very short list this week, but I will put out the poll question for next week, being that next week, or at least the next episode, whether it be next week or the week after, we do have Christmas coming up, and I plan on taking at least one show off, possibly, even though I have my work break coming up. So it's more a matter of securing a co-host. I think I'm all up for doing a show, doing two more this year. Mm-hmm. But there will probably be at least one of those weeks we're off. But every year I have watched a crap load of movies, and I always generate a top 10 list of the top 10 movies of the year. I had 98 movies that I was planning on watching this year, which I'm sure is kind of daunting. But so far, I've watched 62 of them.
That's a pretty good chunk.
Yeah, and I'm not quite done yet. I still have a little bit of time. Yeah. My top 10 list is almost complete, but there is, of course, a little bit of time left for some of those to maybe work their way onto it. I mean, The Fighter and Tron Legacy both come out this weekend, so who knows where those are going to fall into the whole scheme. But since I'm going to be coming up with my top 10 of 2010, I would like to know, what was your favorite movie of 2010? You can send that to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or at Geek Generation on Twitter. Would you like to answer or hold on?
Sure. I pretty much know. I mean, again, like you said, that I could be taken out by some other movie in the next couple of weeks, but
sure.
I doubtful. But so right now, Inception is my top movie of 2010.
Excellent choice.
Yeah,
I'm not going to hint.
I can't foresee anything beating it. So
yeah, I'm not going to hint one way or the other what my number one is, but Inception's definitely up there on the list for me.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, then let's go right into news. Top story this week is no surprise. Howard Stern re-signs with SiriusXM for 5 more years. Howard Stern announced on his show that he has re-signed with current employer SiriusXM Satellite Radio for another 5 years. And instead of telling you all the details, I will let the man speak for himself.
So I started to look at all the companies, Sirius included. And Sirius has been very, very anxious for me to re-sign, as well as some of these other companies who want us to go somewhere else. And I know deep down in my heart, I kept thinking, I'd like to stay here. Because more than anything, I think what we built hasn't been finished yet. I think we're in an incredible position. There are now over 20 million subscribers. I don't know whether that even translates into listeners. It's a lot more listeners than subscribers, because some people have 2 or 3 people listening off one subscription.
Sure.
And suddenly there is this real growth. It's a real business. And I've spoken with Mel from time to time and Scott Greenstein and listened to their plans for the future. And I like the way it sounds for us. So if we're going to stay in radio, I started to think I should stay here. But in order to play it safe, I spoke to a lot of other companies. And I came to the conclusion, after speaking to everyone, that the real innovators and the real geniuses are the people here. That our home should be at Sirius Satellite Radio.
Is that your announcement?
Is that your final answer?
My answer is that I will be here for the next 5 years.
Wow. So you will be here. What happens to everybody?
You are all gone.
All right.
So,
nice to
So yeah, Howard Stern confirming that he will be on SiriusXM for 5 more years. There are not a ton of details out about it. There is the possibility that he's going to be taking more days off, going to maybe 3 days a week instead of 4. And a lot of people complain and moan about that, but you know what? I would be happy to have Howard once a week, so long as he's still on.
I don't get why people are like, yeah, too bad. I don't care. It's like his choice, and I mean, he's been doing it a long time. I think he earns the right to take out whenever he wants to take off, so I mean, I don't get that whole people think he needs to be there every day.
Yeah, but, and for me, 1 day of Howard a week is better than no days of Howard a week.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know there are a lot of people out there that do listen to the majority of the show live, and they're at jobs where they can do that. I cannot listen to the public schools don't allow Howard Stern to be played in the classrooms, so therefore I can't listen at work. I'm about 2 weeks behind because I record and listen to all the shows later on.
Nice.
So I'm still catching up. I had you to go ahead to pull that audio clip out, but I'm so freaking excited that he's still going to be around, and I just can't continue to stress how excited I am.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's going to be it's a good thing for both sides. I mean, he's going to be staying where he is, and I'm sure Sirius is excited, obviously. So it's
hey a now. Next story. Uncharted 3 trailer, and the first details are out. Uncharted 3 Drake's Deception features the return of famed fortune hunter Nathan Drake and follows him through a gripping, action-packed storyline that will take you all over the world. In his search for the fabled Atlantis of the Sands, Nathan Drake and longtime friend and mentor Victor Sullivan set off on a daring trek into the heart of the Arabian Desert. But when terrible secrets of this lost city are uncovered, their journey becomes a desperate bid for survival that will force Drake to confront his deepest fears. And that was me just reading my monologue from acting class, putting a little emotion into
it.
Thank you, thank you. You watched the trailer?
Oh, yeah. And those two games, the first two are my top two games of all time, and I cannot wait for this, and it looks amazing, and I didn't realize that they were even going to have a teaser trailer this soon, and so I was just stoked. It should have actually been on my geek outs because I completely forgot, but yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, Uncharted 2 was one of the best single-player experiences I've ever had, as
fantastic.
Well as being my favorite multiplayer game of all time. I've never played a game that I enjoy more on the online multiplayer than I do Uncharted 2. So friggin' awesome.
I mean, it's such a testament to the storytelling and the voice acting. And I mean, everything is like so top notch. It's like I compare it to like a movie. It's like you can't, I can't think of anything in video games that like has the quality of those games.
Right. And unlike a lot of heavy story games that are pretty much do some clicking and move around a la Heavy Rain. Uncharted 2 is still so playable and just looks so amazing and has a great story. And oh my God, I can't wait for 3. My only gripe with 3 is that I think I've said it before. I don't really care for things that take place in desert scenarios because they're a lot more dry and boring, but I'm sure the Uncharted team is going to handle that in their own way.
Yeah, at least it's a little change of scenery, considering they have done a lot of, you know, the first one is very forest and forest based, and the second one is a little. So I mean, it's a little. I'm sure, like you said, I'm sure it'll be cool. So.
Yeah. Next story in regards to one of your geek outs, the Thor trailer finally hit online, and not just the leaked one from a Comic-Con. No. This one actually had a few slight differences. But the premise of the film, for those that are unfamiliar. Thor, a powerful but arrogant warrior, is sent down to Earth as punishment for reigniting a reckless war. But after a dangerous villain from his world sends the darkest forces of Asgard to invade Earth, the hammer-wielding Thor will learn what it takes to be a true hero in order to save mankind. What'd you think about the trailer?
I think I posted on Facebook. It basically melted my face off after I watched it. It was so awesome. Like, I'm serious. You're seeing him hitting frost giants with his hammer, and I mean, it just was fantastic. That, I mean, everything, the scene with him and Odin was just, it showed the acting that's going to be in it, and it just looks, I hate to compare it to the Green Lantern trailer, but it blew it out of the water just by showing it was, looked so much more realistic and so much more grounded. And it just looks like I can already kind of piece together the story from what it didn't give too much away, but I can kind of see where they're going, and it looks like great. I think he looks like a great Thor. It looks like it's going to be a great movie. The special effects look fantastic. I think it's going to surprise a lot of people who thought, oh, just going to be Thor. I've never heard of it. Like, I think a lot of people were afraid. I think it's going to surprise a lot of people and be a great movie.
I agree, and I'm glad that the trailer did not give too much away, as so many movie trailers do nowadays.
Yeah, well, they give away, like, everything. Like, it's like, why bother going to see the movie? If I...
Yeah, and Natalie Portman's in it, so I'm obviously...
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's very important.
That's all I need. The next story is, actually, this wasn't on your list that I sent you, but it kind of came in the other day. Jon Favreau won't be directing Iron Man 3.
John said, are you serious?
Yeah, you didn't hear this yet?
You're breaking news to
me now. Breaking news. John said on his Twitter account, quote, "It's true, I'm directing Magic Kingdom, not Iron Man 3. I've had a great run with Marvel and wish them the best."
Well, I think I know why. I mean, he subtly pretty much said that he felt that he was too rushed for Iron Man 2, and I think they want to pump Iron Man 3 out. I think they said 2013.
Yep.
So... that I'm sure he's probably just like needs a break. I'm sure he's not. And plus, it will be following Avengers, so it's going to be a lot more complicated. So I don't blame him, but I on the other hand, I'm kind of nervous now to see who they get to replace him.
Yeah. I mean, Favreau was great, even though there were some complaints about Iron Man 2. He still did a great job for what he was trying to do. And I can understand the desire to move on, though. He's really broken out. Iron Man kind of served as a big launch pad for him. Granted, he had done some great movies in the past, but Iron Man was a huge launch pad for him, and his door is wide open to new possibilities, and I can't fault the guy for wanting to take those.
No.
I mean, I've heard Jon Favreau on various shows, including Howard Stern and Geek Time and things like that, and he is a true and true geek himself. So
he is,
I'll follow him to whatever he moves on to. I'm not particularly thrilled about Magic Kingdom, but knowing that he's at the helm of it will make me probably go anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Next story, Batman, Arkham City, Hugo Strange reveal trailer. A recent trailer reveals the main villain in Batman Arkham City to be the maniacal Hugo Strange, who knows the true identity of the Dark Knight. This trailer blew me away more than maybe any of the others on this list.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting direction. I mean, I think there was rumors that Hugo Strange was going to be the main villain, or at least they hinted towards it. But I think it's a intriguing choice, considering not too many people outside of maybe the hardcore Batman fans know who he is. But I think it's a great choice, and it should make it for an interesting game.
I think it's actually maybe a play. I mean, not in the way that they're saying like it's a head fake and Hugo Strange isn't really going to be a huge part of it, but there have also been rumors about Hugo Strange being the villain in The Dark Knight Rises. So if they're preparing the audience, and making the mainstream more familiar with him as a character with Arkham City, that could possibly be leading us into The Dark Knight Rises, where he is going to be more prominent.
Interesting.
So I don't know. But either way, this trailer was incredibly badass. And for the first minute or two, I didn't even realize it was CGI.
Oh yeah, the cutscene graphics look, or I mean it's just amazing. It's like leaps and bounds. I mean, the first one had amazing graphics and scenes, but this looks like they already notched it up a huge amount. It's just incredible.
Yeah, so friggin' good. I cannot wait for Arkham City. That is my most, and even more so than Uncharted 3. I'm excited about Arkham.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with you.
Yeah,
Arkham Asylum was like the Batman game I've been waiting for since I was like 7 years old.
so true. Marvel vs. Capcom 3, Storm and Sea Viper reveal trailers. The trailers keep coming out. Characters are slowly being revealed, and Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is due out in February, but they have announced on the Marvel side, they are adding the X-Men Storm, and on the Capcom side, Sea Viper. And both characters, like everyone else in the game, look awesome.
Where is Sea Viper from? Do you know? Like what?
I believe Sea Viper is a Street Fighter character, fairly recent one actually.
Okay, because I had not heard of her. That's an question.
Yeah, she's a fairly recent addition to the Street Fighter mythos.
Okay.
And clearly, a lot of her stuff is electrical based.
Yeah.
Yeah, but February already, it's coming out. I can't believe it. Like,
yeah, it seems like it flew by the time they've been like hyping it.
I'm so pumped for that too. I don't know. I might just have to stop doing the show because I'm going to be playing Arkham City, Uncharted 3, Marvel vs. Capcom 3. Like, forget all this other crap.
There's going to be a long.
I'm going to pod fade for a little while, as they call it in the industry, and then I'll be back. Now, Mortal Kombat. There's a new character in Mortal Kombat.
I read this and I was like, what?
Holy crap. Mortal Kombat will feature the God of War Kratos as a playable character exclusively in the PS3 version. The Brutal Warrior from the acclaimed God of War series will have his own customized moveset, fatality, and fighting arena available to all original purchasers when Mortal Kombat hits stores in April 2011. Mortal Kombat has always been a brutal game. And it's nice to know that they're bringing the brutality back, but nobody brings the brutal like the God of War. This is the coolest thing I've ever heard in a fighting game in years.
My only question is, I wonder who's going to be the exclusive for Xbox. I can't really think of anyone who could equal the badass of Kratos on Xbox. I mean, are they going to have someone from Halo or something? Like, I can't, I'm sure they're going to have someone exclusive on their side, but, you know, I can't, PS3 is always one out. I mean, even going back to Soul Calibur 4, where we got Darth Vader and they got Yoda.
Right.
sorry, that was my little jab.
As far as the Xbox side, Cliffy B, creator of Gears of War, was on Twitter trying to encourage people to get one of the Gears of War's characters as the exclusive for Xbox. But how does that compare to friggin' Kratos?
Sorry. Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah. I'm kind of excited for Mortal Kombat. I was never a huge fan of the Mortal Kombat engine fighting style.
Yeah, I agree.
But I want to use Kratos and do fatalities so bad.
I mean, I really enjoyed Marvel Kombat versus DC. I just, for the fanboy in me, I thought that was a very cool game. But yeah, I never, with the exception of that, I never really got into the Mortal Kombat games. I know the characters and I've seen the movies, but I never really got like the fighting game, the engine. Yeah, never was really a thing to write home about.
Ditto. Last story we have this show is Black Swan earns itself a wide release. Following the enormous opening weekend success of Darren Aronofsky's thriller Black Swan, starring Natalie Portman, Fox Searchlight plan on giving the movie a wide release into over 1,000 theaters on December 22nd, just in time for Christmas. The movie, which received huge critical raves, has received equally enormous Oscar buzz for Portman's performance as a ballet dancer buckling under the pressures of a high-profile role in Swan Lake. Now, I'm really pumped about this because I thought it looked cool anyway. Unfortunately, I think it's going to be one of those movies that I don't get a chance to see before I do my top 10. But I think from what I've heard of it, it could be a movie that would have itself a place on the list.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard nothing but amazing things about it. I probably will not catch it in the theater either, so I'll probably be waiting till I see it somewhere else. But I mean, it from what I've heard, it's, I mean, I loved The Wrestler. I loved Requiem for a Dream. So, I mean, And I've heard this is just as good as both of those. So, I mean, if the hype is any, if there's any truth to it, it should be. I mean, Natalie Portman's a great actress too. So, I've heard nothing but good things. So,
yeah, really, really sounds great. So I'm gonna check that out at some point. Again, I don't know if it's gonna happen in the theaters or even during this calendar year, but I will see it at some point, one way or the other. Before we take another quick break, I would like to again remind everyone about this week's poll question. What was your favorite movie released in 2010? Send that to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or at Geek Generation on the Twitter. I probably should have named my whole site and show something that I could actually say because I stumble all over it every week. But yeah, at Geek Generation on Twitter. When we come back, Brian being our resident comic book expert, we are going to talk about some of Brian's favorite books that came out this year. And odds are I haven't read them, but we can still have a very educated discussion about it. So we will be back in just a moment.
We all know the best podcast in the world is
The Geek Generation.
But what you might not know is there are other ones, such as...
Like you and me, Hector and Todd. Dangerous Memory.
That's right.
We're reviewing the AFI Top 100, and we're bringing you new episodes every Wednesday. Come check us out on www.hectorandtodd.com.
Hi, this is TNA Tara, and you're listening to the one and only The Geek Generation. I repeat, The Geek Generation.
We are back. And it's time to take a look back in comics in the year 2010. So I'm going to do a rare thing right here, Brian, and pretty much hand the show into your capable hands to kind of lead us through this journey of comic book goodness.
All right. So the year of comics in 2010 was an interesting one for me because I'm primarily a Marvel fan more than a DC fan.
Boo.
At least the past couple of years, Marvel has had a stronger stories, I thought.
Okay, okay.
But surprisingly, 2010 was different for me. DC seemed to be clawing back, and I actually have...
Yay!
I actually have a lot more DC comics on the list than I do of Marvel. So first of all, I'm just going to clear, this is not a best of. I am disappointed in DC with their handling of Batman recently. I don't know if you've read up on the current state of Batman.
I am familiar with the Batman Inc. angle, and I am not a fan of it.
Thank you. I read that, and I was just like, this is the stupidest idea I've ever heard. Bruce Wayne, spoilers alert, sorry for people who haven't read it, but it came out 3 weeks ago. So you
We've talked about it on the show anyway, I believe. Right. So,
Bruce Wayne announcing to the world that he's been funding Batman, and now there's going to be Batmen in every city in the world, and it's going to be like a corporation. And I'm just like, seriously, this sounds absolutely terrible. I understand they didn't want to put Dick Grayson back as Nightwing, but this is an absolutely horrible way to, you know, I'm just like, there's absolutely no upside to it. And I don't know how they can, you know, put it back in the box when they're done with it. It just sounds like a terrible idea. And I'm a huge Batman fan. It just makes me not want to read the books. I just don't see any upside to this. Plus, Grant Morrison's writing it. And as mentioned in the past, I think Grant Morrison is a overrated hack. Yes, I said it.
maybe you can clear some stuff up for me with Batman, because I do have some questions.
Yep.
Okay, so you said it's going to be like Batman branded all across the world, and my initial reaction to him franchising it is that he would basically assign individual heroes as being part of the Batman brand, and maybe they would like wear a logo on them or something to establish themselves as much. But from the way you just described it, he's actually creating people in like Batman suits all across.
Exactly. They're all going to be Dick Grayson's going to be the Batman of Gotham. There's going to be other Batmen in each city, or I even think even countries. I mean, Batman seems to be handling Europe right now in the first issue, but like Bruce Wayne, I mean. But yeah, it's going to be the way they haven't gotten very far into it, but the way the first issue describes it is he's taking it global because, you know, there's more evil than just in Gotham City. And I'm just like, wow, this is way overthinking it and way, you know, Bruce Wayne, I'm sorry. out of character for him. He would never, you know, put all this on the line just to, you know, this sounds like ridiculousness. And it has nothing, he's not involving the Justice League, nothing. It's just all the Bat people. And I'm just like, this is absolutely ridiculous. And I don't know where he's going to get all these people to be Batman. So
yeah, bear with me here because I'm liking this less and less the more you're talking about
it. It's okay. I feel exactly the same way.
Okay. Like you said, this is insanely out of character for Bruce Wayne. He would never reveal to the world that he has been funding Batman because he would do everything in his power to keep his identity sacred. And this just links him more
exactly.
and more.
That was my thought. It's like, you can't say everyone's going to obviously eventually jump to the conclusion, wow, Bruce Wayne probably is one of the Batman, or at least has been in the past. And it's just like, seriously, this is what you thought of when you brought him back from the dead? This was your big idea to, like, revolutionize Batman? You know, then you should have kept him dead, because this is stupid.
It is stupid. And Oh my god. On so many levels, like, I'm like fueling up inside. There are a lot of people who are excited about this because it's finally something different in the Batman books,
but I know.
You have to keep him to the character. And
yeah, you can't jump outside of the box like this, like completely out of character.
Yeah, Bruce would never, he is way too paranoid and way too much of a control freak to allow people to run around in Batman costumes representing a brand. If we just reference Kingdom Come for a minute, he was so like control freak and like all micromanager that he didn't allow other people to do it. He had an army of robots doing it for him because he could control them all. This is going to blow up in his face. One of those guys is either going to go rogue or make a decision that he doesn't agree with, and he is going to beat the ever-living Azrael out of them. Okay? It's going to be that all over again.
Yeah, and it's just like, I don't know. I think it's you know, there's a lot of people that love Grant. I think a lot of it is people love Grant Morrison because he's a very distinguished British writer, and he's written some great stuff that I don't particularly care for, but a lot of other people love his work because he writes hyper intelligent stories. Like, you basically, the way he says it, he wants people to like actually have to work to read the comic. Like, you have to like figure shit out. It's completely, half the time though I read it, it seems like he's been doing acid before he wrote the book. But I mean, I just don't get it. But you know, I'm sure there's an end goal in mind. If not, then God help DC. But no, supposedly 2011 is going to be the year of the Batman. I'm like, fantastic.
Oh God. Well, and on top of all this, they give him a new costume redesign where you can basically see his dong hanging out. And that is just not cool. Like, I actually kind of liked the costume redesign when I saw it originally, but they had shadows over his groin area. But now I see that they got rid of like the black trunks thing, and it just looks like he's in some sort of a speed suit.
So
and
basically,
that's
the suit that Bruce is going to use, and the rest of the Batman are going to wear the generic one that Dick Grayson's been wearing and the old one. So that means they're going to know that there's a main Batman and all the rest are less. It's just terrible. Sorry, I'm getting way off track. That I just had to say that was my worst moment of 2010 for me.
You're getting off track. I'm freaking out over here. I live and die by Batman. This is all bull crap. I hate it.
Yeah, so that's my
move on before I have a heart attack. Jesus Christ.
All right, so let's go to the top comics of 2010. So the way I didn't do specific issues. I did my favorite series. So whether it be a miniseries or a comic book series of 2010, I ranked them in order from 10 to 1, 1 being the best. So I'm going to start with number 10, which is Green Lantern by Jeff Johns and drawn mostly by Doug Monkey, or Monk, I forget how you pronounce
Monkey.
It. But Green Lantern has been consistent this year with, in the beginning of the year, it was still during Blackest Night, which I'll get you later, with that giant crossover. And even after Blackest Night, they're really ramping it up with the preparation for the movie. Jeff Johns is definitely still the best Green Lantern writer of all time, and every month is interesting and exciting. Well, surprisingly, keeping him in character, which is
always nice.
But so that's number 10. Number 9 is a graphic novel, which was the last of the Scott Pilgrim graphic novels to come out, which came out, I think, right a week or two before the movie came out.
I'm excited to hear that, because I've been meaning to read the Scott Pilgrim novels ever since I saw the movie.
You
and
really
that,
should, because actually, as I'm about to say, this one, Scott Pilgrim's Finest Hour, which is the 6th book in the series, concludes Scott Pilgrim's story, but it's completely different than the movie. I mean, there's it ends the same way, let me just say, but the stuff leading up to that is completely different and a lot more involved, and I thought it was a fantastic ending, and it was a long time coming. I think it was supposed to be out like a year before, but they pushed it to get it closer to the movie. But it's great. I think it's probably the best book out of the six, and it pleased me greatly to see it debut on the number one graphic novel list for that, for I think July, and which is a surprise because it's not put out by a major publisher, so it's a big thing. So yeah, that's a definite pick for number nine.
Given that you've read all the books, how do you feel about the movie in relation to them?
I love the movie. I loved the movie. It's a different animal than the books. Mm-hmm. It's got the very familiar style of the books. There's plus and minuses to each. The movie's much more streamlined, and because obviously you can only have so much time.
Sure.
The book sort of goes off into randomness, but you also find out a lot more about the characters in the books than you do in the movie. So I think it's for the complete thing, you have to watch and read. I mean, they're both fantastic, and they're both have their own pluses and minuses.
Cool, I'm done with that.
Yeah, number eight is Buffy season 8, which is a continuation of the TV show,
mm-hmm.
Written by Joss Whedon and select writers that he has handpicked, most of them from the TV show, with a couple guest writers such as Brad Meltzer, who's a renowned New York Times best-selling author who was a big Buffy fan. So basically they set it up where this is the season 8 that would have happened if they continued with the show, but with obviously with no restrictions on budget. But it's a fantastic ride. It's coming to an end. Actually, there's only one or two issues left come out. I think the last one is in January, because then he's taking a break to do Avengers, and then I think they're going to do season 9. But for me, there's been some not so great stuff in it, but to me, it's great seeing the characters again, and he writes them in the only way Joss can, and there's cliffhangers and surprises and new relationships and deaths and everything and returns, and it's if you're a fan of Buffy, you really need to check it out, even if you know don't read comics. It's a definitely great way to continue seeing the characters, and you know, so that's my number eight.
And read those instead of seeing whatever stupid reboot they're making.
Exactly. I mean, they can make this into a friggin' movie. I mean, seriously.
There you go.
It's like unbelievable. Number seven is The Avengers Relaunch by I'm doing the same thing you were doing.
Hey, welcome to the club.
Brian Michael Bendis, which spun out of the Marvel event Siege in the spring. This is basically a relaunch to bring back the old Avengers of the big three of Thor, Captain America, and Iron Man, because the past couple of years, the Avengers had been the new Avengers. So, trying to think. I just lost my train of thought. Losing my train of thought. Sorry. I'm drawing blanks.
That's
sorry.
Okay. I'll go into a random tangent based on the Avengers. The cartoon. Have you been watching?
Yes, I have been watching.
What do you think of it?
It's not bad. It's I don't know. I like it. It's better than there was an Avengers cartoon back in the day that was really bad. But this one, at least, it seems to be taking stuff from the current stuff. And I mean, it's a good preparation for the movie, I think. And
it's,
I remember.
It's typical Marvel animated fare, though, where it's enjoyable and action-heavy, but also very hollow, I feel.
Okay.
As far as, like, character development and everything, like, was it last episode or two? I don't even remember. We discussed Young Justice, premiere that was on, and that was phenomenal.
I forgot to mention that. That was a great thing.
Compared to the Avengers cartoon, Young Justice had more character development in that 1 hour than the whole season of Avengers did.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, I went off the train of thought, but I'm back to
Cool.
Avengers. Sorry, that was my brain fart of the day. So, anyways, but yeah, it's a great comic because it brings back the classic feel of the Avengers, but at the same time, it has the Bendis dialogue of the new Avengers from the past couple of years, and it's basically Marvel's flagship title right now, where you know the big stuff's still happening. It's a lot of cosmic explosions and big stuff, and for right now, I think it's probably my second favorite Marvel title. Yeah, because So yeah, sorry for that. moving on is number six is Green Arrow, and there's an interesting story behind this because for the past couple of years, Green Arrow, while he's awesome in Smallville, actually for the first time ever, I think a character in a TV show is better portrayed in a TV show than he was in the comic books.
Wow.
Green Arrow has been absolutely terrible the past couple of years. DC has made some horrible decisions with him. I think it was 2006, maybe, they had him marry Black Canary and completely, you know, take away the character of Green Arrow and settle him down. And I'm just like, this is – and of course, they learned their lesson because the title tanked. And so they ended up having to do a reboot. They relaunched the title and had him sort of not divorce Black Canary, but they're on the outs right now and they're separated. And this is great because it's a good reboot. And it sort of reminds me of Smallville where he's back on his own. He's in Star City coming out of Blackest Night. Star City is in shambles, and he's sort of going back to the old school Green Arrow of where he's wearing a hood now and patrolling the forest and trying to keep the city safe. And it's a good throwback, and it's good to see Green Arrow back in the spotlight after he's been mishandled for so many years. So,
do you think a lot of that is a direct result of the popularity of the character on Smallville?
I don't know. I don't think so, because I hate to say it, but I don't know that DC pays too much attention to Smallville. But I think it was sort of like, oh, crap, we realized we crapped out. We ruined this character really, really, really bad. Mm-hmm. And we need some way to, you know, revitalize it and bring him back to his roots. So I think I'm sure there's a slight influence there, but I don't know how much. But yeah, so we'll see how that goes. It's only, I think, 6 issues in right now. But right now it seems to be, and it's actually selling really well, surprisingly, because Green Arrow is usually, the only time Green Arrow has ever sold well before this was when Kevin Smith wrote it back in 2001.
And that was what, Quiver?
Yes, exactly. Yes. They brought him back from the dead. Wow, good. You're good. So there you go.
I know my stuff here and there, even though I haven't read all these books. I remember random things.
So, yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So, number 5 is Superman's Secret Origin, which is yet another retelling of Superman's origin. But this time it is sort of, again, retelling. But it's done by Jeff Johns, and it has fantastic artwork by Gary Frank, who draws Superman pretty much exactly like Christopher Reeve, which to me, I don't know, brings back childhood memories. And I mean, it's a fantastic story that weaves new stuff. They take stuff from Smallville, they take stuff from a lot of the different incarnations of Superman, and make this the new permanent origin for Superman in DC right now. And it's great art. It was a miniseries, 6 issues. The hardcover actually just came out yesterday, and if you need to find something, I think I told Scott, if you need something to put on your Christmas list or just need a good read of Superman, it's a really, really good book. So,
see, the Christopher Reeve interpretation of Superman is always nice to see in art form, but yet I still prefer the ginormously jacked Superman that, when turned into Clark Kent, walks around with the walks around with the glasses on, and he's like this tank of a man, and everyone's like, there's no way you could possibly be Superman, even though you tower over me and your biceps are bigger than my friggin' head. That, it's way more comical to me to have that version of Superman.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, I agree. So, next is Flash, which is number 4. Again, written by a common person on this list, Jeff Johns, who I think is right now the best writer in comics. Late 2009, they brought back Barry Allen, who was the original, not the original Flash, but the Flash that most people remember from the 60s onward, who was killed off in 1985. I'm getting into some heavy fanboy shit, so everyone bear with me. He was killed off in 1985 in Crisis on Infinite Earths.
I actually read that one.
Yeah, and it's funny because when they made the Flash TV series in 1990, they used Barry Allen as the Flash, even though he was dead in the comics at the time. But I grew up with Wally West as the Flash, but it was an interesting experiment to bring Barry Allen back because he was seen as like the, you know, DC's trying to bring back like all the original, you know, iterations of the characters. And originally fans did not like this. But I think it was a really good story, Rebirth, that is, in 2009. And so then they launched an ongoing title in early 2010. And it's 6 issues in, and I really like it. It's bringing back a lot of the police, because Barry Allen was a forensic scientist. So there's a lot of that in the comic, which I find interesting.
And that's popular in mainstream TV right now.
Exactly. And supposedly later on in 2011, they're going to do a Flash crossover, which is going to bring back Wally West and, you know, bring back the Flash family. So they're not ignoring the old Flash, but at the same time, they're trying to establish Barry Allen as the one and only Flash right now. So I'm enjoying it, and Flash has always been one of my favorite characters. So
you mentioned bring back Wally West. Where is he?
He's not anywhere gone, but they haven't used him since Flash Rebirth, where he's Flash 2, but he's not the Flash they're centering on. They sort of tweaked his costume to make it look a little different than Barry's. Barry's wearing the original costume now, the basic Flash costume. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Wally actually has two kids now and is married. I don't know if you knew that, but
I did. Yep.
Yeah, so he's sort of the family guy right now, so I think they're going to try to put him back in. So we'll see where that goes.
Have you noticed an opinion among the comic masses at all as to whether they're, like, wide arms open accepting Barry back, or are they pining for Wally, or what's going on there?
It's a mixture of both. At first, there was a, like, oh, God, and I included. I was like, really? Do we really need Barry Allen? But, mm-hmm. I mean... Jeff Johns did a really good thing in Rebirth where he really showed the differences between Barry Allen and Wally West, and you know how Barry Allen was never really given a fair shot. I mean, they're just different characters, and there's a certain difference to. And I mean, Barry Allen really works well with, I think, the original Justice League members, and mm-hmm. there's certain differences. And I mean, I think they're exploring that right now. They're trying to reintroduce Barry Allen to a new generation, I think.
Does Barry actually have a personality now?
That's the thing. He has more than he's ever had when I used to read him. When I read him in Crisis, I was like, this is terrible. Like, he seemed so like...
He was a dullard.
Yeah, exactly. And Wally was so like, you know, I grew up with Wally, and he was so like outgoing and, you know, wisecracking. And so, yeah, it's definitely a difference, but I think they're slowly trying to show that, you know, Barry Allen is the character. Much like Jeff Johns did with Hal Jordan, because everyone thought Hal Jordan sucked as a character. Mm-hmm. He made him into a character again, and I think he's going to do the same thing with Barry Allen.
So. I still prefer Kyle and Wally.
See, no, there's that frame of thought. I completely understand it. My friend is the exact same way. I grew up with those two, but right now, I like Hal better. I still love Kyle, and Kyle has a special place in my heart, and I'm glad that Kyle's still around, but I really like Hal right now, and I'm not to say that I'm not at that place yet with Barry Allen,
yeah.
But I could see it getting there. So
now Kyle has taken Ion as a moniker, correct?
That was before. When did they turn him back? During the Sinestra, he did that. He took it during the Sinestra Corps War.
Yeah.
After that, at some point, he gave up his Ion power, and someone else took it. Another Green Lantern took it over, and now he's basically just a regular Green Lantern again. But he is being spotlighted in Green Lantern Corps, which is the spinoff comic, and him and Guy Gardner. So he's got a big role in the universe. He's just a normal Green Lantern again.
Interesting. I know for a while he had been kind of relegated to outer space more. Is he kind of heading back?
Yeah,
now?
He's pretty much in outer space now, but. In 2011, DC is doing something called War of the Green Lanterns, which is going to be right before the movie because they want to get the people interested.
Yep.
So it looks like Kyle and Guy Gardner and Hal are all going to have like a giant war, and they're planting the seeds right now. So yeah, it looks like Kyle's going to have some high profile stuff coming.
Wow, they're going like one huge Lantern story after another.
Oh, they are. It's fantastic. I don't know how Jeff Johns managed to do it, but he's got it like bam, 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 just like. Keep, you know, there's a little lull in between, but then they ramp it right back up to the next one. And I mean, it's worked right now because Green Lantern is the highest selling DC comic. I think actually the new Batman Incorporated might have beat it, but I haven't seen the sales figures. But as of now, Green Lantern is still in the top 10, of which is like, you know, Green Lantern was always never that prominent. So
yeah, nobody buy Batman Inc. Rebel. If it doesn't sell, they can't keep it going. Anyway.
So on to number three, which is Blackest Night, which is sort of a cop-out because it happened half in 2009, but it finished up in 2010, which I thought was definitely the best crossover of 2010. It was a lot of stuff that built up to it, but the whole thing of the Blackest Night, and which was always in the Green Lantern Oath and mm-hmm. Brightest Day and Blackest Night. So it was always this prophecy. And, you know, they brought it out, all the dead coming back to life. And it tied in with Bruce Wayne being dead at the same time. And it really was well done. There was the main series, Blackest Night, of 8 issues, but then they had all the miniseries that you didn't really have to read but had more info going on around it. And I thought it was just really well executed, and every month it made me excited to read the next issue. And then at the very end, it had a great payoff with, instead of, you know, the Blackest Night at the end, they found out there's a White Lantern mm-hmm. and a White Lantern Corps, and they brought back such prominent characters back to life, like Hawkman and Firestorm and Aquaman, characters that have been dead over the years. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it as an overall crossover, and I thought it was good. It was a good way to bring DC into the next level. So I liked
it. I am really pumped to get the trades and read that whole storyline because everything I've heard about it sounds amazing.
It's really, really well done. And you don't need to know a lot. They really fill you in on what's been going on. So it's not like you feel like you're like, oh my God, I don't understand this. So it's a good, I mean, I've seen it at Barnes and Nobles and Borders a lot as like top selling. People really seem to be digging it. So
Yeah. It's on my Amazon wish list. Anybody? Anybody?
There you go. There you go.
Anyone want to buy me a Christmas present? Buy me Blackest Night. There you go.
Cheap plug. Cheap plug.
That's right.
Number two, again, it's kind of a bias, but hey, this is my list, is Amazing Spider-Man. For 2010, I give it credit. It shipped three times a month. So every month you had three issues of Amazing Spider-Man. Well, because what they did, they used to have Amazing Spider-Man, Web of Spider-Man, all the different titles. But basically what they did in 2007 is they said, you know what? Amazing is the main title, and it always has been. Instead of publishing that once in the other two titles, why don't we just put out Amazing three times a month, and so you only have to follow one title. And since then, you know, there's been fans that have hated it because, you know, the whole disillusion of the marriage of him and Mary Jane, which this is neither here nor there. I mean, it's a huge thing where it's kind of split down 50-50, and I'm sort of treading right in the middle. I don't know still how I feel about it. But
would you mind rehashing that for our fans that might not be familiar?
Sorry. Go for it. I'll go for it. basically in 2000, I'm trying to go in my data banks. I think it was 2006. At the end of J. Michael Straczynski's run of Amazing Spider-Man, who had written it since 2001, he's the creator of Babylon 5. He's the guy who's writing Superman right now. He wrote Superman Earth 1. He under a direction of Joe Quesada, who's the editor-in-chief of Marvel and in charge, was forced to break up the marriage of Peter Parker and Mary Jane, who have been married since 1987.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason they got married in 1987 was because they got Stan Lee had them getting married in the newspaper strip. So Marvel decided, you know, oh, why don't we just marry them? And they had not even been dating at the time. So they really had really, really quickly put them together and married, which is something no one ever brings up, but it's fair. So, but anyways, in 2006, they did this storyline that was pretty much hated by everyone. I didn't see it as horrible as everyone else, but most people thought it was garbage. It was co-written by Joe Quesada, the editor-in-chief. Basically, they had Peter Parker make a decision to save the life of Aunt May, who had been shot, because at this point, his identity was public due to Civil War and all this stuff. She had been shot and she was dying. He made a deal with the devil, who in Marvel is Mephisto, who said, I will save the life of your aunt if you give me one thing that's most precious to you, which is your marriage. So him and Mary Jane made the decision to save Aunt May, that they would give up their marriage. And they had this whole thing where, you know, it was their like one last day, basically, that they got to spend together. And so they took away the marriage. And at the end of the book, Peter Parker wakes up. He's in Aunt May's house still. Like he's like 20, 25, 26, and he's living in his aunt's house. I don't know why. No. jobless, and all these old characters are back, and you know, everyone went apeshit because they thought they were like basically saying that the last 20 years didn't happen. But that's not the case. Over the span of the years, they've shown that Mary Jane does remember his secret identity. She does remember being married. It's just everyone else that has forgotten his secret identity now, and you know, it's a lot of rebooting and retconning, as they call it in the comic book industry.
Sure.
But so anyways, in 2010, as they've been going on, they branded this Brand New Day after he was not married anymore. So now this has been a single Peter Parker since 2007. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's been good and bad, but the fact that they put it out three times a month, and it brings back a lot of good Spider-Man stories and good memories for me. A lot of people say it's rehashing old Spider-Man stuff because it's Spider-Man being single again. But especially in 2010, there was some great stuff. It started out with the Gauntlet in 2010, which was this slightly it wasn't even really a crossover, but it was a story arc where all his greatest villains came back and were breaking him down month by month, like he fight Electro. And then after that, there was something called The Grim Hunt, where they brought Kraven the Hunter back from the dead, and it was this big thing. And
how'd they do that?
It involved a lot of weirdness with using Spider-Man's blood and using this voodoo stuff, and basically Kraven's back. But it was actually a really well done story, although I never liked Kraven the Hunter as a character because I always thought he was hokey. But after that,
that big lion head and huge mane is hokey. I don't know.
Running around throwing nets at Spider-Man, and you know, in the middle of the city. Come on, people who are like, that should be in the next movie. I'm like, you really want a guy in a lion's mane running around throwing nets and using like bolo whips at Spider-Man
just to do it? They should have had someone dressed up at like a wildlife fundraiser as Kraven, just to have him like in there. You know?
Yeah.
Not be the villain, just to kind of make sure they did it in a movie.
But then after that, Joe Quesada came back to tell the story of really what happened in between, you know, Brand New Day and One Last Day or whatever the name of, I can't remember the name of the storyline from 2006.
Was it One More Day?
I think that might have been it. Thank you. So this was called One Moment in Time. So they actually flash back to the new continuity now of, on his wedding day, how the wedding actually didn't happen now in this new reality, and how I don't really want to spoil it, but I'll spoil it anyways. But basically, Mephisto, through his evilness, had decided to postpone Peter Parker and Spider-Man from actually making it to the wedding. So Mary Jane thought he stood her up, but then actually she finds out he didn't, and they have this huge discussion of how she feels that she can't be with him if he's going to be Spider-Man, and how can they raise a baby, and blah, 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 and all this stuff. Some of it worked. Some of it was very hackneyed and very not well-written, just, you know, trying to get through that. We need to have Spider-Man being single because that way, you know, kids don't want to read about a married superhero. So, but whatever. So that happened. And so finally, after that, now they've sort of rebranded it again with this new story arc called Big Time that just started, where Hobgoblin has come back, who they haven't used in probably close to 10 years. So I'm excited about that. But I think
that's cool.
Just overall, through the ups and downs, Spider-Man has always been one of my favorite characters. And just the fact that they managed to put out three issues a month and without skipping, that's a lot of comics. And for the most part, they were pretty well done. So
I'm glad he's high up on your list, but it sounds like they're really confused with what they're going to do with him.
They're really trying to, like, because they've still got the hardcore fan base that, I mean, if you go on the internet, there's people that are like, I'm never reading Spider-Man again, but yet people are still buying it. So someone else, I mean, I'm half time wondering, people who say that stuff, I'm never going to buy another Spider-Man comic again unless you put them back together. Mm-hmm. And then yet the title is still being published and it's pretty high up. So they're trying to, I think, you know, serve both ends, but I think they're going to have to eventually, you know, make a mark and say, you know what, he's going to be single, screw it, you know, either with us or against us. So
cool.
And so number one is an interesting choice. I don't know why I picked – I do know I picked this, but it's an interesting random choice. But it's Brightest Day, which is the miniseries that started after Blackest Night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bi-weekly. So every other week it comes out. And it started in May. And every time it's come out, it's been my favorite comic of the week. It's written by Jeff Johns. Well, it's a shocker.
Yeah.
But what it's doing is it spotlights the characters they brought back from the dead, which is Aquaman, Firestorm, Martian Manhunter, Hawkman, Hawkgirl, and I'm trying to think, there's one other, Max Lord, and Hawk and Dove. But basically, what the most part that I've been enjoying is Firestorm, who's one of my favorite characters ever, and seeing him being redone and you know, built as a character again. But I got to say, the most surprising is Aquaman, because I've never understood Aquaman as a character, for having, even in Smallville, he's sort of just like, okay, he talks to fish.
He's wooden.
Yeah. But they really, really are doing a good job of making Aquaman a character you care about. They're making him badass. I mean, there were some fight scenes where I was like, wow, I don't think I've ever seen a fight with Aquaman that I thought was badass, and that was badass. So just on those things alone, it's just amazing. It's got some great art, great stories, and it's still going on. I think it's going to end in early 2011, because I think it's supposed to be a year. So if you liked Blackest Night, definitely check out Brightest Day, because it's definitely the next portion of the story. Basically, the overarching story is they found a White Lantern, and they're trying to find out who's going to be – there's supposed to be a chosen one who's going to be the only White Lantern. And actually, in the last couple of weeks, they had Bruce Wayne get possessed by the Lantern and become a White Lantern for 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone thought Bruce Wayne was going to be the White Lantern, but it was not to be. But definitely, it was a very cool cover, Batman as a White Lantern.
Sweet.
But so that's my list, and Brightest Day is my number one pick. So
cool. That is a lot of awesomeness. I'm insanely pumped to read Blackest Night and now Brightest Day.
Yeah, they actually just put out a Brightest Day trade of the first 8 issues. So
sweet. The Brightest Day, they're looking for a chosen one. Is that chosen one been hinted to be one of the returning from the dead characters?
Very good. Yeah, they're trying to say that at some points, but at other points they're like, maybe it's not. And oh, I forgot, Deadman is also one of the people that was brought back as well.
Well, that just seems wrong.
Yeah, he's now alive, and he's just not dead anymore, and he looks like a human, and he's weird seeing him in flesh. But,
he's like flesh and...
Yeah, he completely... And he was the one who first had the White Lantern ring on, and he's the one who found the White Lantern.
Oh, wow, that's weird.
And that's the White Lantern told him that there would be a chosen one, so...
I'm not dead, man.
No, he's alive, man, I guess, now, but...
Interesting. Very cool.
Yep.
All right. Well, we don't get into the comic books that heavy that often, so
yeah,
I'm
I
hoping.
For the,
no, everybody... don't apologize. I'm hoping that our fans that do appreciate comic books are really jiving off that jiving. Who the fuck says jiving anymore?
Hey man, jive is I was gonna try to save it, but I couldn't.
I'm hoping the people that are really into comic books dug that segment because that's what it really was for. So thank you for preparing all that stuff for us. That was awesome. I like hearing stuff that I don't necessarily follow on a regular basis.
Exactly.
Because I like to get it saves me a lot of time. I don't have to go on Wikipedia now and read all the storylines of all the characters that I want to follow and don't have time to read the books for. So
yeah,
I appreciate that.
You have no idea how hard it was. Because, I mean, let's be honest, there's probably 100 comics published a month just between Marvel and DC. And, like, all of 2010, I was like, holy crap. So, I mean, yeah, it's hard to – there's a lot of stuff that comes out and a lot of it – there actually is a lot of good comics out there that I obviously didn't mention. So, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be people like, you didn't mention – you mentioned all the straight superheroes. There's, like, Walking Dead. There's, like, comics don't involve superheroes. But, you know, I like superheroes, so.
Sure. One book I wanted to ask your opinion on. I'm not sure if you read it or not. I actually did read one trade this year, and it was based largely on the hype that surrounded it. I didn't hear too many great things about it. I was kind of in the middle. I didn't think it was the most fantastic thing ever, but I didn't think it was bad either, and that would be Superman Earth 1.
I actually have read that, and I was actually going to mention that, but I forgot. It was not on my top 10 list, but it was written by J. Michael Straczynski, who I mentioned before, had done Spider-Man and all that stuff. It had a lot of big hype behind it, and I read it, and I was just, I don't know, to me it felt almost like Clark was too aggressive and almost like not, he lost that farm boy charm that he used to have. And I know that's the everyone hates Superman because, oh, he's like a Boy Scout, and he's, but I mean, okay, I've been watching Smallville for 10 years now, and I've grown to enjoy Clark Kent as that kind of character, and I just thought it was very not Supermanish at points. And it was okay because they used a new villain, and I'm sorry, Krypton having a sister planet and all that garbage. I thought
the new villain was kind of weak. And what was his name? Tyrell? What is that?
Yeah, I give them credit for creating a new villain and not using like Luthor or Brainiac, but they could have easily plugged in anyone in that role and it would have been the same thing.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
So I wasn't too impressed with it. The art was fantastic, but I thought the writing was not that great. But again, what do I know? Because it sold a bajillion copies and they're already promoting that there's going to be a sequel and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I guess, I don't know. See, because we're not coming from – the target audience for that was the people who don't read comics. They wanted a good introduction to Superman without having to, you know, have any baggage attached to it. But I'd rather them read, like I mentioned in my list, Superman's Secret Origin, because I thought that was a much stronger book than this. But and it's interesting because it went right to graphic novels, so there was no single issues, so it was an interesting
experiment. That because that's how I prefer to read comics anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and it seemed to work well, and I guess I'm sure you're excited. I don't know if you, but Batman Earth 1 is coming out next year, so
I am excited, but after reading Superman Earth 1 I'm a little less excited. But again, I did like Superman Earth 1, but I think my biggest gripe with it is the fact that I did have a little bit of that similar thought that you did, that they took away some of his farm boy charm and his Boy Scoutness, and yes, that's what makes Superman Superman. Yeah. But I have no issue with making him more realistic and question himself and all that.
Yeah.
And I think, if anything, I know it's just one self-contained trade, but I felt it was very rushed as far as the story went. All of a sudden, he was brooding and unsure of himself.
Yeah, it wasn't paced very well.
That's... And then all of a sudden he's like, okay, time to throw the costume on and kick ass. Like, I think there should have been more inner turmoil about that kind of stuff. I would actually like to see him. Like, maybe Smallville spoiled me with 10 seasons of developing Clark Kent as a character.
No, I think that's what it is. No, I agree. I mean, it didn't seem like they had much characterization of Lois or Jimmy, or I just didn't feel like – it didn't feel like a Superman book to me. It just felt like, okay, here's Superman and Clark Kent, and everyone else is just like – generic people.
Yeah, I actually kind of dug the look he had with the hoodie and the biker jacket
Scott
and stuff.
Scott hated that. He was like, that's like terrible. And I'm like, I don't know.
Oh my God,
like
I freaking loved it. I kind of want to buy that jacket and get a hoodie and just have that look as me all the time. But
you could pull that off. I could totally see
it. Damn right. I'm going to get a Berserker logo right on the back of the jacket and everything. I know someone who will do it. But I was thinking it would have actually been kind of cool if he just, like, I don't know. It's almost kind of like Superboy when he was first introduced, the clone version.
Yep.
He had a similar look to that. And I thought it would have been cool had he just thrown like an S t-shirt on, like underneath that, and almost done that for the book. Like, why jump right into the costume?
Yeah, I was surprised. I didn't actually think they were going to use the costume because I had only seen the cover, and I'm like, oh. And then at the end, I was kind of like, oh, so they did the costume, and they slightly did some changes to it. Like they added like an outline around the S now, and it's just, yeah. I'm like, just like, seriously? Like, I don't know.
And Terrell, it was like too much public exposure and too big of an open world threat for him to jump in. Like,
yeah,
now he's thrown into the limelight so suddenly, whereas he could have worked his way up a little more. I think that would have been way more interesting than, boom, I'm Superman. Here I am. Here, world. Ha!
I will say my favorite part of it, I think, my one favorite part, I think, was the beginning where it showed him going from job to job and, you know, showed him playing football and showed him going to the science place, and there was a lot of that. It was an interesting thing where he didn't just go, okay, I'm going to be a reporter. Although I didn't really see, although on the same in the same hand, I didn't really see, it seemed kind of random. I was just like, I want to be a journalist now, and I don't know.
I think I understand the rationale for that because they really tried to illustrate the fact that he was good at everything.
Everything, yeah,
like,
exactly.
He went from one thing to the next. The guy was like almost a genius when it came to the science stuff. He was doing anything athletic with no problem whatsoever, and I think he chose the reporter thing based on two things. One, he ran into some immoralities with some of the other jobs, and that did kind of show a little bit of his Boy Scoutness, that he wasn't willing to work for someone who was gonna do things on the sly, as well as the journalist being somewhat of a challenge for him. It wasn't the thing he was best at. Perry said his work was so-so.
True,
so
yeah.
He had room to grow, and I think he saw that as a challenge, and he saw Perry as someone that was going to be a moral person that he could look up to, and that's why he went down that road. So I thought that was actually hashed out really well, but like you said, this was one of the stronger parts of the book, and I wish that had lasted longer
as
it
I
went
agree.
From like a guy jumped. Trying to find his way. Like the psychology of someone who's good at everything, trying to find something to do that interested him versus... Mm-hmm. I'm going to fight intergalactic supervillains as Superman.
Yeah,
it's just
exactly.
too much of a leap.
I think they should have done more, like you said, more grounded. And then, you know, if they made a sequel, wait till, I mean, you don't need to do everything in the first book. So.
Right.
So, yeah.
Cool. No, I just wanted to get your opinion on that since it was one of the only things I read this year.
That's okay. It's good. Not bad.
Yeah, I'll get more back on things, hopefully, in 2011. We'll see. But we're almost at an hour 40 at this point, so... let's start wrapping things up for today. On our way out, do you have anything you'd like to plug or even a final thought?
You can follow me on Twitter at Xander Harris. Yes, like the Buffy character. I'm interested if you guys have any feedback. Like, I've never actually, you know, I never take advantage of this before, but I'm thinking, like, you know, why didn't I ever give it? Seriously, I'd love to hear what you guys think. If you want to talk comics with me or whatever. So that's that. You can also... write to the Geek Generation as well for your feedback. So
cool. I'm sure fans will hit you up on there, or at least follow you and see
Hopefully.
What you have to say.
We'll see. Please. No.
You had mentioned to me a while ago too about potentially starting a comics podcast that we could launch on the Geek Generation channel. I don't know if you still have plans of doing
I got bundled down with stuff, but I'm still definitely thinking about it. And if the fans want it, I would be glad to do it. I'm trying to fit it in the new year. If I could do a weekly review, I could do certain topics. I mean, there's a lot of different ways I could do it, so we can see.
That sounds great. I mean, one of the things I'd love to do moving forward into 2011, we've been really focused on this show. I would love to add some alternative programming to the channel so that those who maybe were interested more in comics could download your show in addition to this one. Or I've been thinking about potentially doing like 2 or 3 minute movie reviews and adding those to the channel and having those as standalone things. So I don't know. Yeah. I think 2011 is going to be a lot of experimentation for the show. So I always want to keep doing this because I think this is strong and I have a lot of fun doing this, and it offers a different opportunity and providing entertainment. But I do think there might be a desire for some of those other things. So I'd like to kind of experiment around and see what the fans prefer in some different formats. So again, as always, if you like the show, I ask you to please tell your friends. If you'd like to check out some of the news articles that we discussed or just some of the various other things that we have up, go to www.thegeekgeneration.com and check that stuff out. On that site, there is a button to subscribe to this show in iTunes. While you're there, please rate the show and write a review. I noticed someone else did write a 4 out of 5 star review for us, so I appreciate that. There's also a donation button on the site that no one will ever use, although it's the season for giving, right? So if there was ever a time, I suppose now's the time. If you have any questions, comments, insults, or topics you'd like us to discuss on a future show, I'd love to hear those. Send those to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on Twitter. If you'd like to submit an article to the site or an audio file to this show, please send that to guest@thegeekgeneration.com. And it doesn't have to be something you totally generated. If you have a clip from a movie that you would like me to put at the beginning of the episode or even play during it, if there's something that's like from a news article, like I played the Howard Stern clip today, anything like that, send all that stuff to guest@thegeekgeneration.com. And as always, the show theme is provided by Machine Supremacy. A link to their site can be found on our site. So, good lengthy episode today. Had a lot of fun talking with you, Brian. I appreciate you being here with me.
No problem. Had a great time.
Awesome. Well, then, it looks like our next episode will be the last of 2010, and I'm looking forward to it. So I will see you all next time on The Geek Generation. Later.